This 1UP podcast is brought to you by Games for Windows. Welcome to Better PC Gaming, created with the idea that gaming should deliver more. Games for Windows branded titles bring you all the fun of gaming without all the work. And with the hottest titles around and Windows Vista compatibility, Games for Windows promises to deliver great new gaming experiences every time you play.
And we out, we out, we out, we out, we out, we out.
So we have anything left or are we done? I'm kind of wasted.
I think we're done.
I'm not sure about this week's podcast.
Yeah, we've been here too long.
We talked about too much stuff already.
Let's kill it. We know how to kill it.
Have you guys read Harry Potter yet? Yeah, are you any going to read it?
Hell no.
No?
No, I'll read it. I'm not standing in line or nothing.
You going to read those baby books?
Oh, God. Yes, I'm going to read those baby books. Do you know that she's richer than the queen? I'm not saying that's proof that she's great, but do you know that? She's the richest woman in the United Kingdom.
That's cool. Richer
than the queen.
Do you want me to get you some Dr. Seuss after you're done?
Also, funny. Also, have you not read the Harry Potter books?
No. The movies are okay.
It's so
You've
much
seen
better.
The movies, and
They're
you haven't
magical.
Read the books. The books are the good parts. So you know the Harry Potter story. You've experienced Harry Potter universe, but you've watched like the lame one, and you're dissing me. At least I read the books.
He's like, come on, dude. He's like the literati, and he's like too busy reading Impulse, which is a comic about Flash's kid cousin to read about.
Ryan, you are Harry Potter.
Yeah,
you totally are.
Making fun of me.
You got glasses and everything.
Schmuck.
Dang, what the hell? Both of you got glasses too.
I got contacts.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sean pretty much wins.
So you've got your feud going on still with the Fallout community.
Yeah,
we could talk about this now that we're at the end. I just didn't want it to take up the whole first segment.
Yeah, sure. Well, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, the Fallout thing's kind of ongoing. It's pretty stupid. And I got to say that, after the initial forays of hate, well, there's been further forays of hate, but in between all that, I had a few moments of clarity and actual intelligence with a few of the guys on the forum. And so, I started getting a photo of those. We're not all that way. Don't get everybody to hate us. Don't use your position of power to have people make fun of us. Of course, now I'm making fun of the guy for doing that. But it's true. It's true. And there were some reasonable people that I talked to. There's some people who wanted to actually talk about Fallout with me on the forum. And so that was the beginning of a sort of nice conversation going on with a couple of the guys.
Throw in the quick Cliff's Notes in case you missed last week's podcast. This is all about Jeff and the rest of us responding favorably. We're anticipating Fallout 3 and the hardcore community who swears by Fallout 1 and 2 saying there's no way in hell that this is going to be a good game.
Right.
And so then that's what the war was.
Right.
So.
Actually, we podcasted about it, about the community, before we had actually even really seen the attacks on us personally. So that made it more interesting. I mean, because I had posted a blog about it from E3, and it was like whatever 150 words, and it was sort of posted on the fan site as like further proof that all game journalists are morons and assholes, licking Bethesda's balls because
but it was Beth $.
Yeah,
yes. Just hot. It's like my spelling Microsoft, with like a triple K in the
right.
except this makes a lot of sense.
I don't really feel like being defensive about it here, but I did say later when I was talking with these guys, it's like, look, it's early, and if something looks good in an early stage and we say that doesn't mean we're validating everything that the company does and that it's guaranteed to get a 10 out of 10 review. The game could end up sucking, whatever, but of course our default when we're looking at very early code, if it does look okay or good or promising, is to say that, because what's the other side, right? It's like unfair to be harshly critical of something that's not remotely done yet, right? No other art form does that.
And as great as we acknowledge that those original games are, I mean, part of your argument was they think, I mean, there's the chance that they're enshrining their memory to such an extent that they're now, oblivious to any faults that might have been there. So when there's all the talk about, well, these assholes that are making the game now have no sense of humor, they can't do the jokes, they can't pull off the sophisticated, comedy that characterized the series. And it's like, we're pointing out, well, there's some serious groaners in those games, too, that you'd be ashamed to retell those jokes.
Fallout 2 had a bunch of sort of like lame-ass pop culture references that Fallout 1 didn't have that, you know, these games were not perfect. Fallout 1, I don't know if it's in our Hall of Fame, is it? It might be. I can't remember. But anyway, I actually reviewed it for Computer Gaming Role when it first came out, and I gave it, you know, an excellent rating. It was a great game. But they weren't perfect. Like you're saying, the jokes weren't always all funny. There were things that were wonky about the game. It's just a really odd thing that over time these things become, you know, canon, that you just can't, you can't fuck with them, you know? So anyway, why are we bringing all this up?
Because I spent all that time setting you up for the transition.
And then I fucked it up.
Jeff,
okay, so that brings us to this point. What do you want? I'm not a... I'm not a Garnet. I can't do it. Like,
so you
okay,
post,
so.
You posted that you personally found some issues with the weapons handling in the old games.
Right. That was in.
So what I was setting you up for was saying that, hey, the old games, we're looking at them with rose-colored glasses.
Right.
Here's one reason why. Here's another reason.
Thank you. So I said in the forum when I was saying that not everything was great, guys, in the old games, I wrote, well, first, I will say that I personally found some of the weapons handling in the old games to be a little silly. Like, I found my suspension of disbelief being challenged when I was missing shots from 1 foot away consistently.
Well, Jeff, I usually do not post here, but when I see remarks like these, I just have to comment. Now we will set the Wayback Machine to the Old West. October 26, 1881. The place, Tombstone, Arizona. Now remember that the gunfight was fought in a vacant lot about 18 feet wide, but also in Fremont Street in front of the lot. Most of the shooting was done at ranges of about 10 feet or less. The number of shots fired can only be estimated, and estimates vary from 20 to 30 shots total. Now, I must emphasize the closeness of the gunfight once again when I relay the various injuries below. The Earps injuries, Wyatt came out of the gunfight unscathed while Virgil was shot through the right calf. Morgan was shot through the upper back above his shoulder blades by a single bullet, and Holiday was grazed on the hip. Total hits, 3. Clanton injuries, like Clanton, Billy Claiborne ran through the middle of the fight and escaped uninjured. Frank McGlory was shot in the abdomen near the navel. Early in the fight by Wyatt before he was felled at the end of the fight by a pistol bullet hitting him at the base of his skull under his right ear. This shot fired by Morgan Earp. 2 motherfucking hits. Tom McGlory, already fatally wounded from a double shotgun blast, was seen running or stumbling westward when Wyatt shot him in the abdomen. 2 shotgun, 1 pistol hit. Billy Clanton was shot through the wrist by Morgan, in the right chest, through the right lung by Morgan, through the right arm by Virgil, in the abdomen under the 12th rib by Virgil, in the hip by Wyatt, and a graze across his scalp by Virgil. 6 fucking hits. Now you may be asking yourself, WTF? Well, think about it. These were 9 men who were known as excellent shots, and at ranges less than 10 feet, firing between 20 and 30 rounds, and they only scored 12 hits. In fact, 2 ran right through the gunfight and were never touched. 9 men who were known for their accuracy were going at each other, guns blazing, and they score less than 60%. And if you use the higher total and take out minor grazes, even less. Then you claim to be disillusioned by not hitting at close range? Dude, what the fuck is your problem with not hitting at close range? I've seen morons fire a pistol at a foot and miss. They were that bad of a shot. So your statement is hilarious at the least, ludicrous at the best, and as far as I'm concerned, they were too liberal with their hits. You ever hear a saying that goes like this? Sometimes the safest place is right in front of the person holding a weapon. There's a reason for that saying. So let me get this straight. You think an FPS shooter is more realistic than an ISO TB game? Man, dude, I so hope you're not even trying to imply that, for that would show just how little about gunplay you do know. Try looking up some statistics for number of rounds needed to be fired to score a fatal hit sometime. It may enlighten you before you make another comment like that. Sometimes I think folks should smell what they're shoveling.
Shift 8, rolling eyes, shift 8.
Cheers, Thor Grimm.
So,
cheers, Jeff.
First off, I wanted to say, guess what, bitch? We've got the internet, too, and Wikipedia.
Right.
And we want to say that all scorpion species possess venom. In general, scorpion venom is described as neurotoxic in nature. One exception to this, however, is the Hemiscorpius leptoris, which possesses cytotoxic venom. The neurotoxins consist of a variety of small proteins, as well as sodium and potassium cations, which serve to interfere with the neurotransmission in the victim. Scorpions use their venom to kill and paralyze their prey so it can be eaten. In general, it's fast-acting, allowing for effective prey capture. And if you can't tell the difference between a scorpion's venom in an ISO-TB game and an FPS, then fuck you. You need to get on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I think he got owned.
Yeah. I don't know what. I didn't know how to respond to that post.
Well, are you saying
I think we just did.
I think we just did, yeah.
The FPS is more realistic than a turn-based video game?
No, I'm not.
He's saying a game with fucking goddamn ghouls that walk around with their faces falling off and talking like grunts and stuff is like totally fine. But then when it comes to shooting your weapon in a turn-based or whatever, he's got to break out Google and give us the entire story of how the fucking West was won. and then do we know that we have been owned?
Yes.
Right.
Wow. So, yeah, just had to share that. I mean, that's. Give me a break, man. I mean, that's the kind of shit that makes me hate the internet. I wish you didn't have the internet, dude.
I'm right there with you.
Block,
I'm always with you.
Block Wikipedia from your browser.
Who, me?
No, the guy who wrote that.
Oh, the guy who wrote that.
Wyatt Earp over there.
Wyatt Earp.
That's you.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? Some people got a lot of time.
Cheers.
Cheers, Thorgrim. Cheers. So there's that. I'm sure there'll be another round after this podcast now, so we'll get back on that. Meanwhile, none of us really knows much at all about Fallout 3 at all, so we're all arguing over fucking nothing.
No, we're arguing.
They've shown like 5% of the game.
We're arguing
best.
For the
2%,
principle
1%?
That you should not assume that there's no way in hell that this game could be decent.
Right.
Before when there's only 5% of the information available.
Yeah.
And that's right. That's a principle worth arguing for.
I agree. Hear, hear.
But you do need to remember, people, if you've got any beef with the way that gunplay works in your video games, shut your mouth until you go to a real firing range and miss a target at 1 foot away.
Right.
And your buddy, like, seriously, I shoot guns too. And that's a cock and bull story right there, man. Unless, I honestly can't figure out unless you're firing some, like, fucking musket and you're packing the shit, the gunpowder yourself, like, dude, you can't miss it a foot away.
Right. Also, you know, part of the point.
Fucking liar.
Paul, the point of what I said in that post, which I didn't, because I wasn't spending a whole lot of time thinking it from every, you know, I thought the point was obvious, but in that game, it's not just that you're standing a foot away, it's that because it's turn-based, you're taking turns. So I shoot you, then I wait, then you shoot me, and then we see who misses. I mean, that's right. Not. Right. I'm sorry, that's not realistic.
Yeah, right there,
that's not how it works.
His beef should have been, well, if you care about that, why don't you seem to care about it when you're doing the same thing with axes and fairy dust in World of Warcraft?
And the original point I was making
he could have ripped you up that way, and I just gave him the ammo.
The original point wasn't that I thought that Fallout was realistic or it wasn't even about realism. Yeah. I was just saying there were some things about Fallout I didn't like.
People
that
love
being one of them.
Bring in their
and he was sort of responding back, well, you should like it because it was realistic. Just like the killing mutants was realistic, yeah. I guess.
That's the thing. You know, when you play shooters and you go into any game like, you know, Insurgency or Red Orchestra, and if you've got one complaint, it's like, it's real. Shut up. That's realism. Because, you know, you're like, okay, it's going to take me 40 minutes to get across the map to where I'm going to get shot in the head and spawn again. Shut up. That's real. It's like, well, I don't care. This is a fucking game.
Yeah, it's the realism.
It's supposed to be fun. Real is, there's no one that thinks that that's fun. To like, you know, in Red Orchestra, to run into no man's land, get hit by artillery, and if that spares you, then to get hit by a tank shell or something, it's like, okay, sure. Yeah,
it's all about
what
you're looking for. I mean, we were talking about all the shit before the break.
Right. Also, by the way, those guys, these same guys were referring to Counter-Strike as Clownter-Strike. Get it? Because like, haha, because people think that game's realistic when actually the realistic shooting game is Fallout.
Yeah.
They're arguing Fallout is realistic.
They make fun of paintball, too. They'll regularly go to the local paintball area and just, like, hang over the fence and talk shit on the players about how they should be playing Fallout. Bunch of pansies. Go get your Fallout on. they do live-action role-playing of the Fallout battle system.
The sad thing is,
imagine that, like, they're standing a foot apart from one another, then they have like a third guy running between them to simulate whatever his story about the dude running through the middle of the gunfire.
See, if I had to make a top 10 favorite PC games of the last decade or so, or ever, Fallout would be on it. If someone were to say, "Hey Jeff, are you a huge Fallout fan?" I would say yes.
Yes.
But now I don't, you know.
Well, one of the arguments on the thread was like, "Yeah, but you play it once a year like almost everyone else does in this place." And I'm like, I can't think of a single game I trot out once a year and play through. Like, is
that's a religious observance at that point. Like,
yeah,
that's
beyond fandom.
Yeah.
It's like, well, maybe like a Pac-Man or something, you know. One of those kind of games. But there's no, like, long...
You got the calendar mark off your days, Bobby. Seven more and you'll
Pac-Man
play Fallout again.
Pac-Man has
July is Fallout month.
I do like Pac-Man's realistic pellet eating, though.
It's funny. I'll have to admit, a totally fascinating aspect of gaming for me. And we brought it up in last week's podcast when I mentioned that I was talking to some of the guys that make Wolfenstein and Quake Wars, and specifically for them, how the people who are talking the most shit about their game now are the people that are playing the hell out of the last game that they made or the last patch version or something. And then when, you know, step it back a year before then, and then they were talking shit on whatever that game was and saying the version before. But you just have this, like, the equivalent of the gaming Ted Kaczynski, you know, and it's like, and these guys are somewhere in a cabin with their Texas Instruments and Commodores and playing this game and saying that, you know, like, that it's just, like, inconceivable that you would play anything new or that you would accept any kind of change. And Counter-Strike's got the same guys, too. It's all about 1.6. Sure. CS Source, what the fuck's that? That's not real. It's not Counter-Strike.
Right,
right.
And any game, it's like, and I actually encourage people, I want to sort of track the communities where this is, I mean, that are parallel to what's happening with Fallout now, where it's like, it's just you have, you know, your sacred cow and you don't want anyone messing with it, and or whatever subsets, you know. I'm sure they're there for, it happened with Eve at various points and stuff, maybe XCOM and stuff, but just like, here's the game. This is how it was, and time stopped
right
at the moment.
Probably even people who are like doing that for Star Wars Galaxies, which was widely acknowledged as
the
most broke-ass game in the
Ultima
universe.
They
rebooted it.
Ultima Online, right.
Yeah.
EverQuest, people lamented that when they started adding things to make it easier, people were bitching, you know.
Battlefield?
Asheron's Call was that way, too, between 1 and 2. I remember everyone... I worked at a grocery store, and there was just this fiend, this chick I worked with. It's just her and her husband were fiends for that game, and they were both like having like real-world extramarital affairs with other people they had met in the game. And in between the talk about that, I kind of figured out that that they didn't like the Asheron's Call 2 so much.
You know,
what happened with EverQuest to EverQuest 2? That's why there's still people playing EverQuest 1
in
droves.
I mean, I do feel it's totally understandable to be a big fan of something and to not want it to be fucked with, to feel like even sort of violated if somebody has taken your sacred franchise. I mean, we could probably all come up with a TV show or movie or book series where if somebody else was taking it over, we would be like, "God, you don't understand. You don't understand J.K. Rowling. I don't want Tom Clancy writing Harry Potter 8. Mm-hmm. He's going to fuck it up."
Right.
But then, you know, you can understand that, but then don't read it. You know, or don't just go away. Like, you don't have to just
go play Fallout again.
Go play Fallout again. It's still there. Yeah, it's
I'm not
going
particularly
anywhere.
Mad at Frank Herbert's son for writing more Dune books. I'm just not going to read them.
You just don't acknowledge it, right?
If you're not feeling the idea of a Transformers the movie, you got your VHS cassettes of the cartoon,
right?
You got your Marvel comics. You know,
I don't have to. You know, I don't have
Open
to. I can pretend
up.
That Gilmore Girls season 7 didn't happen. Amy Sherman Palladino was gone.
Okay, Jeff.
And all that lame writing that they did, it just didn't happen. That's not canon.
You totally actually, you're basically describing
for them all the time, aren't you?
I am.
Complaining about these things.
I can't believe that they had Luke get back together with Lorelei. Amy Sherman-Palladino never would have pursued that relationship.
This is also, this is huge in comics. Huh, Ryan? This whole, like, principle, but DC Comics is interesting in that they will listen to, you'll get the equivalent of the diehard Fallout fans for DC Comics, and they'll listen to them long enough, and then they'll be like,
"Well, they're probably
all right.
The worst,
let's give it
right?
to them." And then they just say, "Like, well, none of that shit happened. Remember the last 5 years of comics, that piece of shit comics we were putting out? That didn't happen anymore." And now all of a sudden, there's some new crisis, and that means that we're listening to these fans over here. And
right. Well, comic book fans.
Marvel's going to be like doing that right now.
With Elektra.
Now that we're at the end of the podcast, we can get close to the end. What time is it? Yeah, we could talk a little bit of comics. But Marvel's, I guess they just revealed that like everyone in the Marvel universe is a Skrull.
Pretty much.
Is what?
Yeah. Is a Skrull, which is an alien.
Oh, really?
So that's basically like, remember the stupid when they had like the Spider-Man clone thing?
Yeah.
And that bomb? This is basically like saying, let's make the entire Marvel universe a spider clone. So,
wow.
Well, it's not.
At some point, they'll just be like.
I heard this was specifically about Frank Miller.
Select people.
I heard because they made
Skrulls and have always been Skrulls or something.
They made Elektra a Skrull because I guess Frank Miller, and I don't know if this is true or not, Frank Miller was never going to work with Marvel again because he was still pissed off that they unkilled her. So this is their solution.
So
like,
they're
she's really dead.
They're retconning everything.
So she's really dead.
She's really
and
dead.
And he's
Frank,
like, Frank Miller's like, all right, I'm feeling that. Instead
all right,
of like,
sign me up again.
Which one of you assholes is the Battlestar Galactica fan and it's too stupid to realize that what works well there is going to fuck up the Marvel universe?
Yeah. Wow, that's
rad.
I'm so glad I'm out of comics. See, now my memories of the Marvel universe are preserved.
No,
the
not.
Way it was, the when it was right.
Why don't you go online and argue with people about it?
Don't you wish Chris Claremont were still writing X-Men?
Oh man, those were the good old days.
Oh god,
Hail
they were the good
X-Men.
Old. But when he came back, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, you can't write now.
Right, but he could back in the day. Classic X-Men's.
That shit doesn't hold up.
Classic. It doesn't? No, the old ones do from the 70s.
No, I look back. That stuff doesn't hold up at all. Sometimes, like, EC
it
comics
doesn't?
Will, but I don't have the nostalgia factor. I'm reading these, you know, like, as a first.
Yeah.
I wasn't born at the time. And sometimes those are actually pretty good. But old Marvel, the stuff I grew up on, Claremont era, just like you're saying, utterances. I can't read that.
All right.
I can't do it. But don't take my word for it. We've all got differing... points of view.
True.
That is true.
That's what makes us a great world.
God, we're just back from the break and we're already fucking in a lull. What is usually come back from the break ready to go?
Yeah, it's usually the high point of the podcast. Oh, well. We're back. We're back from the break. We got, I don't know, a little bit ways to go. What should we talk about next?
This one-up podcast is brought to you by Games for Windows. Welcome to Better PC Gaming. Created with the idea that gaming should deliver more. Games for Windows branded titles bring you all the fun of gaming without all the work. And with the hottest titles around and Windows Vista compatibility, Games for Windows promises to deliver great new gaming experiences every time you play.
Okay, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. All right, so a while ago we were... reading some snarky things that we found online and in other magazines from other publications, who kind of our ongoing thing of finding lame game writing and then making fun of it, and we promised at the time we were saying we know we're not immune here at our magazine. We're not trying to be holier than thou. We just want it all to stop. We want the bad stuff to go away, and but we promised that we would find our own bad writing, and so we did. We're true to our word here at Games for Windows, the official magazine. And now we're going to read some of our official bad...
The thing is, though...
Yeah.
We didn't print it. That was the...
That's true.
That was the case we did make for ourselves just when we were trying to say, all right, we'll admit we suck too. But then we like kind of jumped in and say, well, actually, we won't print it when it's that bad.
Right.
Well, this was the shit that was so bad we didn't print
it. Yeah, so here's some...
But this was written for our magazine by someone who was on the staff of the magazine.
Yes, so. It was. This is the abort button.
Who is no longer on the staff.
Right. So, Ryan is going to be our guest reader.
Okay, so, look, what you're about to hear, this is as it was submitted to the editor.
Ryan, you were an intern at the time, right? And you were editing this?
This was after I was hired full-time.
Okay.
Anyway, okay, so this is from, I guess, sometime in 2004. It's a preview for Warhammer 40,000, Dawn of War. Which was THQ's Warhammer 40,000 RTS. And the strap line below, which is the little headline right below the game name in
right.
a preview, the strap line is "Too legit to quit," which makes no sense to anyone here. And this is how the preview goes.
Ryan, talk to me, pretend I wrote it, and you could just talk to me like you just I just turned this into you if you need to. As you read it, I'm just saying, if you need to direct some comments as you read it and you want to relive the astonishment of the
experience. Well, this thing is actually lined with commentary from the editor.
Okay.
Was that my comments?
Yeah.
Or? Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the preview of Warhammer 40,000 Dawn of War. Daylight comes, but me no want to go home. Blame Warhammer 40K, Dawn of War. Hours have been sacrificed to late beta builds as I lose complete track of time and stumble my way home horribly late. Proof already that Dawn of War grinds and smacks other strategy games down with its deliverance of one damn impactful RTS. So that's your first paragraph. Okay. So that now you're glued to your seat.
Could you read that first sentence again just for...
Daylight comes, but me no want to go home.
Okay. And then Mon.
Okay. So
yeah.
It's like Jamaican
this
opening.
This is a little bit too legit.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Unlike most strategy games where you feel disconnected from the action, Dawn of War's camera can zoom right in on the frenzy. From there, in brackets, it says, Warcraft 3 let you do this a couple years ago.
Not to mention the dangling modifier.
From there, you can see the animation detail like a giant orc puppy feasting on the legions of chaos. These nuances, even from a distance, pump up the staid repetition of other RTSs.
That's utterances right there.
We'll get back to that.
Yeah, we'll get back.
Pump up the staid repetition!
In a war of hundreds, battles feel alive. Instead of the shrunken scale common to the genre, environments rise on a grand level. Plus, there's true personality. Orcs let out a ringing, poorly written song. Orcs, 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 orcs. The single-player campaign casts you as the Space Marine troop, the Blood Eagles. Great care has been taken to balance the units, ensuring raging single and multiplayer battles. For example, the Eldar race quickly crumbles against Marines in melee, which is why Eldar have travel gates for speedy transport around the map. Checks and balances, folks. Oh, and the one in brackets here says, this is the hallmark of every strategy game going back to chess. This is not unique.
Checks and balances, folks.
Yeah.
Like, you dropped that, too. It's almost as if, you know, he were the PR person for it. You know, just like, hey. So check it out. I just showed this to you.
See what we got here?
The orc can punch. The other guy can shoot. Checks and balances, bitches.
After you've beaten any of the 13 single-player missions, you can go back and play from the opposition side. In brackets, it says, again, who's the opposition? Relic, the developer, notorious for ridiculous difficulty in their single-player games, has tweaked this campaign to still challenge, but be enjoyed by all. Be enjoyed by all.
Okay. Yeah.
The first mission plays out in appropriate hand-holding tutorial style. Your team must cut a swath through a flat map of orc ground troops. Further along, the fifth mission features an ascending mountain. And the comment in brackets here says, as opposed to what other kind of mountain? where enemy snipers take advantage of the high ground. At any time, you can pause the action and set up to 99 commands per unit for finite precision. With vicious aplomb, Dawn of War is honed for the kill come fall 2004.
Vicious aplomb.
Yeah.
That's how I approach every day of my life.
Yeah. The thing, when he mentions finite precision, the comment says, as opposed to infinite precision. Also, pausing action to set up commands is another standard feature of strat games these days. So the whole thing is...
Let me see that one part, because there's my favorite line in there.
Hold on.
I really
need my favorite was always ascending mountain.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny that I know about this, because I think it was the first week that I joined the staff that I was already made to sit down at a computer and read and laugh at this. And then at that point, that was my initiation.
Yeah, I think we trot that out as how not to write for us.
Ascending mountain isn't what a descending mountain isn't that called a crater?
Yeah, this
doesn't exist.
I don't know. Yeah, right. Like
this already. This isn't even hands on either. So he just saw. This is just a preview. But then not only the fact that there's. The nature of, I don't know, the nature of the commentary he makes and then the specific words he uses, correct me up here, but just like, proof already that Dawn of War grinds and smacks other strategy games down with the deliverance of one damn impactful RTS.
Yeah.
But just that it grinds and smacks them down. Right. And then not only that, but with the deliverance of one.
Right. That was my overall thing was like.
Impact. Oh, yeah. This is not a word. Next comment. This whole sentence is awkward. You think?
Wait, what did I say wasn't a word?
Impactful.
Yeah. He just tried to say things that like sounded good or he thought sounded good.
Utterances.
Yeah. Anyway. Nothing personal against that former writer.
It.
We love you. Not as a writer for our magazine.
Oh shit!
So yeah,
and when he starts talking about the single player campaign, Cassius, the Space Marine troop, the Blood Eagles, the comment is there is zero context here for what the Blood Eagles are, as opposed to what other race. What is this game about? Who is fighting and why? If I know nothing about Warhammer, like many readers won't, how would I know what this means?
Yeah.
All I know is I'm going to be totally singing that Orcs, Orcs, Orcs song all day.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing is it's like it alternates caps in – so what is it? It's like Orcs – okay, Orcs all caps, Orcs no caps, Orcs with the R capped, Orcs with the K and S capped. So I mean, how do you
orcs,
even
– Orcs, Orcs, Orcs,
Orcs, Orcs, Orcs. That's personality, though.
You know, it was a computer gaming world inside joke before we switched that – at one point, Robert Coffey, who was, you know, if you listen to us and think we're smartasses, Robert Coffey was like Lord God King of smartasses. And he had to do a review of, wait, was it this very game?
It was. Mm-hmm. The review of this game, several of the screenshot captions used.
Right. Robert Coffey took quotes from this review and used them as the screenshot captions. So
you guys told me that. I couldn't believe it because I'm like, okay, well, so
no
that all the readers
you guys.
Basically
no,
think
it was
that
a total inside joke.
You guys write piece of shit captions.
Right. Yeah, so we did that for our own amusement.
Yeah, at the expense of of the reader and also their impression of you.
Yeah, well. What
and
are you
in
do?
your notes in your notes
but
from Jeff,
there.
You even tell him to please look at the September 2004 issue of Computer Games, which has a 2-page preview of the same game as at an entirely different level than this.
I did.
Like here, look at this other
Ouch.
Magazine.
Look at the competition.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
This is how.
Well, not everyone was born to be a game journalist.
It's hard,
but
a lot of them
are anyway.
Funny that. Yeah. Not that we're perfect.
So I guess we'll use this and force a transition to this other more serious but related topic that I've been meaning to address all week and see what you guys have to say about it. And basically, the discussion started in the office via email, and it was in response to a New York Times online story that argued – that, you know, to a much greater extent than what happens with film critics and, you know, moviegoers, game reviewers are in touch with the game-buying public. It actually, what it did is it looked at Metacritic aggregates and said, you know, if games receive scores of, you know, 80% or above, these are also games that sold, like, well. Mm-hmm. So that started this whole, you know, this discussion about, well... you know, this is a good thing. I mean, at first everyone was like, oh, this is fantastic. And it says we're more in touch with our audience, you know, especially compared to, you know, to movie critics. And you know, here, this is where I have to step out and say I'm speaking for myself alone here because there's a great deal of, you know, our opinions are divided in the office and we think different things. And I think that's for the better. These are great discussions to kind of have. And I just kind of wanted to kind of bring it back and continue it on the podcast. Cause I think I'm hoping it's interesting to people because it ultimately comes back to you, you know, as someone who buys games and whether, how much, you invest in reviews and how much you turn to reviews to let them guide you in your decision, you know, in your buying decision. But so the first thing that I didn't point out in there, but as soon as we ended the discussion, it came to me. I was like, well, for a New York Times story, I was kind of amazed that the writer and then the editor wasn't sort of differentiating between correlation and causality. And that I say that because if you, you know, have data that says, Jeff, go ahead. This is the lecture time.
Sorry.
Class is in session. So anyway, but if you have data that says, games got on average a score of 80% or above, and then you say that on average games sold whatever a million units. you don't have, you can put those two together and say, hey, there's likely a correlation here. And then you devise a correlation coefficient to see how strong that correlation is or how weak it is. But what you wouldn't do is say that these positive scores are responsible for the sales of these games. And that's right. Exactly what the writer did. And just straight out, you know, without even saying, hey, before we make these sorts of sweeping statements, we need to take ad budgets into account. We need to look at all these other variables that are going to influence this. And instead, what is there? Because, you know, you could have us review a bunch of these games and put our reviews in a locked case somewhere.
Right.
And then when you open them years later, you could find out that the correlation is still just as strong.
Right. Right.
So, basically, I'm talking about, you know, like research methodology 101. But anyway, that wasn't my point that was, you know, slippery science, so to speak. But my issue immediately was like, well, should we really be so happy that we're all saying the exact same things, you know? And I thought about that, and, you know, because I brought this up before where, you know, I personally celebrate the diversity of viewpoints that you find in, you know, film criticism, which is a much more mature, you know, avenue of criticism. It's been around longer. Same thing with literary criticism. And the reason being is because, you know, and another thing I brought up on our thread, and then this became a point of contention, I said that I think that by and large what happens in a game review is what I would call, you know, consumer reporting.
Totally.
And I differentiated that from criticism, but then that became the talking point. Well, what does criticism mean? But so consumer reporting, I think if we're looking at the game in the way we would at a vacuum cleaner and we're saying, okay, ultimately here's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to, you know, perform this function, and does it do it or not, you know, and then we can all more or less agree. If you take enough people, you'll get a pretty good average. You know, it's not going to be all, well, sorry, not an average, but I think that you'll find for the most part, people are in agreement about the extent to which it functions. You know, I mean, when a game's horribly broken, we all agree or something like that.
Right.
But then the thing is that, you know, another thing, it's kind of unfair because, you know, like the other people that were in on the discussion aren't here right now. And they're, you know, so you guys, I mean, if you're in that camp, you can provide their point of view. But as far as I understand it, it was like, well, the problem with so-called criticism is that it's ultimately, you know, and this is the big question with the way we write reviews, are you going to be a snob? Are you going to be pretentious? You know, are you going to be an arrogant asshole, or are you going to just speak to the people and say the same things that the people would say? And that was alarming to me because, for one, it was kind of like when you begin a discussion by saying, are you with the troops or are you not with the troops? You know, go on.
Well, I was about to say, for me, anytime I write any review, like Roger Ebert had a quote where he said, I think it was, the role of the critic is to inform the public opinion, not reflect it.
Right, not to be a ventriloquist.
Right, so that's kind of how I've always approached reviews myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem with that distinction is that, yeah, you can inform is you know, if you say you're going to be pretentious and you're going to epitomize all that's wrong with when criticism gets out of hand, and God knows it does, it can go horribly, horribly wrong. When you see, you know, a 60-page essay that's talking about that, you know, the box of Cheerios on the table represents someone's, you know, Freudian, you know, dysfunctional Freudian relationship with someone else in the family. That, of course, is total bullshit. And the other assumption was that criticism ultimately would entail identifying and arguing what a game means. And so I disagreed with both of those because, for one, I would never try to, with a few exceptions, I would never try to say, this is what this game means. You know, this is when the green triangle blows up the red rectangle and the white dots come out, it's really trying to say this. Of course not. That's completely stupid. And yeah, please kick me out of the building when I do that. but instead, what I would associate more with criticism is that, rather than saying, hey, this is fun to shoot these and to turn these into white things, but to look at the whole thing and say, you know, what is it specifically that's making this fun, or what's uniquely fun about this in the greater context of other games that are like it, you know?
Have to be mutually exclusive with providing that, you know, the other part. You know, you can take a more analytical perspective, a more why is this thing doing what it's doing, and yet still offer the quote-unquote consumerist,
information. You definitely can. Yeah, because ultimately you're still saying that something's enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're still getting that point. And you're still going to address. And the consumer's thing, what I identify with that is when you itemize things and mm-hmm. you're really concerned with, here's the part, you know, if it's not the paragraph, here's the sentence or the clause of a sentence where I identify that the graphics are good, that the performance, you know, is high quality, frame rates and stuff like that, where I talk about the audio. And the problem I have is, see, when you start to discuss a game specifically in these terms, you know, as the sum of its feature set or something,
yep.
you're ultimately kind of like left going in circles, because you're like, say if you there's a truly unique game that comes out and you're trying to say, hey, I really want people to play this. I had a fucking great time playing it, right. and I want you to trust me. But the problem is, I'm a stranger to you. You have right. a billion people in your life that whose opinions you trust, who serve as filters for you, in that they say, hey, John, check this game out. It's rad. And they don't need to tell you why. You know, they might not be the most articulate or anything, but you just trust them because, you know, 9 times, 8 times out of 10, they've recommended something, and, you know, sure enough, you enjoyed it to the extent that they seem to indicate you would. But now, you know, we're on the internet too, and not only is it people in our immediate, you know, environment, but people online, message boards that we frequent and stuff. And so what happens is we have all the – these people are everywhere. There's not like there's some kind of vacuum on feedback on games or anything.
Right.
No. That's just over. It's just everywhere.
Right.
And so I think if I'm going to say something, and I don't know you, you don't know shit about me, and I'm going to say something and it's worth your time to read, I've got to do more than say, hey, this is a fun game. I need to do a few things, and I need to explain why I think it's fun, like, and everything I just said. And the thing is that you got to keep audience in mind here, and you can use language that might be off-putting or pretentious or whatever, but you can also use any language you want. I think guys like Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote the, you know, pop bestsellers, Tipping Point and Blink, Steve Johnson, Everything Bad is Good for You, you know, just use them as examples. If you look at their books, they're full of excellent ideas,
mm-hmm.
but they're presented in very, very plain language that's accessible to anyone with, you know, even a baseline reading level, an entry level mm-hmm. literacy. And their ideas are great, and that's what matters, because, you know, the opposite, I think, you know, pretentious or whatever would be when you've got insipid ideas and you have fake intellectual language.
Right.
And that's like the worst, you know, message board post you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It's like 10,000 words, and it's basically asking you if you think like a multiplayer game should be considered art.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in direct distinction to that, you know, this
yeah.
is contradistinction to it. I think this is fun. I think that actually people will remember when someone, you know, in life, when someone says comedians work too, you know, sometimes the best joke you hear, it's like, oh, it's funny because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone is able to take and articulate and explain something that you've already felt, that you felt for mm-hmm. the longest time to be true,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, oh, but this is actually why that's true. And now that gives me ammunition to explain
sure.
myself. Conversely, they might present to you an idea that you had never considered, but then once you take it and you play with it and you're in this process of deciding whether or not you agree with it or whether or not you think it's valid, later on if you accept it, then it changes your perspective. And when you're playing the next game and when your sort of perception's been changed, you're evaluating it differently.
Right.
And all the stuff, it sounds academic, but I think it happens in the plainest terms possible, just naturally. It's
right.
just how life works. And I think if you do those things, that's memorable. And that's a memorable review. And that, I think, in my personal opinion, is something that I would try to provide to someone so that I would say, hey, otherwise, yeah. I mean, because, like, personally, I don't.
But obviously,
I don't go
most people working in this industry don't think like you. You
but
know? I mean, most people aren't thinking their review out that way at all. They're just, you know, they're trying to cram 300 words out as fast as they can, and they're following a cookie cutter approach because that's all they
that
know.
Make, you know, this is a point that some of the guys at Penny Arcade have raised before. Is like, and if you know, when again, you're trying to convince people that they ought to be reading the reviews, that you're, you know, buying your magazines, clicking your pages and stuff, and if not only do they not know you, but then if they knew that you were trying to hurry up and get something done, maybe you didn't even want to play the game.
Yep.
Maybe you're just like, you know, and if they knew these other things too, I mean, how much less would they value
right.
your perspective in the first
right.
place next to their friend who
sure.
works at Blockbuster or something?
Right.
So, and again, that's the thing is I was wondering, it didn't happen, but I was waiting for someone to say, oh, but what you're doing is ultimately snobbery. You're saying, but you're a special kind of writer, a special kind of critic, and you can
yeah.
do something that the average Joe can't. But I don't think there's anything that's, you know, that involves snobbery with that, because any more so than someone who was, you know, a painter by occupation or a photographer would say, you know, when you approach them and say, hey, will you do this job for me? They go, well, there's a disposable camera. Here's a pencil. Why don't you get anyone to do it? Because no, like they've, I'm a photographer, I'm a painter, because yes, I do believe that I have experience and that I have a certain amount of talent doing this thing. And yeah, and I think you should say that if you're a writer and that's your occupation, you damn well better say that. Otherwise, what the fuck are you doing? You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's snobbery. I think that's just,
right.
Yeah, this is what we, you know, what it's we dedicate.
Pride.
And so, right. You know, another thing to, and this is interesting too, because this discussion was happening last week, and then this week on thescapist.com, I haven't read all of their current, you know, issue, which is basically, it's all available for free online. So I'm not going to advocate it because there could be some pieces in there that I don't like. But of what I read, it was really interesting in that, you know, I saw like, you know, Warren Spector, you know, of Deus Ex fame was saying some similar things about audience and getting to know someone. And one thing he was suggesting that critics can do to make themselves more valuable and their services more valuable is to establish not only just a voice in terms of a style or something, but establish themselves as critical minds so that people can say, you know, like, oh, Ebert, and you have a certain assumption about this is what he likes. This is what he thinks.
Well, I think there's a few of those in this industry, but by and large, the mediums themselves don't encourage that. They don't encourage personalities to stand out.
This is more that like Lester Bangs with video games.
Well, I don't think it's that, because it's not about... Well, I think the hitch there is thinking that you need to have a bunch of people seeking fame and to try to be superstar reviewers instead of just like there's a byline there and you recognize that byline.
Yeah.
And, you know...
like, oh, I generally and it agree tells with you what something this guy says.
Yeah, and it tells you something about
he seems to be into the same kind of stuff I'm into.
Right. And not only like, not just the simple level, the old, you know, like the, you know, because this is how they encourage it at EGM too, where you have three, you know, reviews for each thing. You say, oh, well, this is John or someone, and I, you know, or this is David, and I agree with them in the past. But even more specifically, it's not that like my friend who's been a good filter for me and that his recommendations have been, you know, have been good recommendations, but it's like, I understand, you know, more specifically what I can put words on it, what this person thinks makes a good game of this genre or whatever, or just a good game or something like that. And I think we could do that. It's difficult, but I think we could do it. And I guess I'm just reacting really to this idea that, for one, we should be saying exactly, we should be in complete agreement with our readers. And the other, you know, it should not be threatening to anyone when we don't agree with our readers.
Let me get back to that New York Times article, because I do think there's a couple points here that about this thing that are actually, well, let me just run this by you. You know, his point was that one of his points was that we're, as he said at the beginning, that we're more in line with that the game rankings, the game reviews are in line with the games that people are buying, so that there's a correlation there, right? And but the other side of that is that in things like movies, it's not. So you can go look at the top 10 box office, and you'll see whatever. You'll see some bullshit, horrible movies
Kangaroo
up there.
Kangaroo Jack or whatever is
right.
the
best-selling game
in the worst
review. And you go to Rotten Tomatoes, and it's got like 16%. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, people are going to go to these dumbass movies no matter what. The critics, you could take it as one way. The critics are out of touch. Mm-hmm. They're too intellectual for these movies. They don't understand what America wants to go see, blah, blah, blah. And that's probably true to some extent. I mean, so one way...
I think they understand what the average Joe goes to see, but it's not your...
Or the average Joe doesn't just give a fuck. They've worked all week and they want to go to the movies. It's only $10.
Or they're going
they've
to
got
tip
kids.
Their Mac on.
Yeah, whatever it is that they're just going
16
and
years old,
all they know is Robin Williams is in it, and that's good enough for them. So let's go see this butt fuck movie. And sorry, and because Robin Williams is in it, it doesn't matter that Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 2. We're going because Robin Williams made us laugh in Mork and Mindy 25 years ago.
Right.
So, so the difference I think is that we're one of the reasons why it's so much closer is because. I think the gamers are actually smarter and more informed.
Well, there's the value thing that which he introduced, and I agree with, is that when you're paying $60 for a game versus the $10 for a movie,
Yeah.
Although that gets complicated if you're the guy and you're doing the old school thing and you're paying for your date and the popcorn and the nachos and the
right
and the drinks. You're up to the game but price.
I think it's one of the things about this community. We're still like basically the same kinds of people talking to each other. So that's why it's close. You don't have families in Iowa.
That's definitely the case.
Who don't read anything, just going wandering into Walmart and buying Counter-Strike.
Right.
You know,
right.
The people buying it already know about it.
Yeah. Most of the people in the industry, we're, like you said, we're just, for better or worse, it's just people that play games. And I think that's good. But I think, I personally believe, you know, but in accordance with the outline I just gave, I think we should be people that just play games, but we should also be people who are maybe who put a lot more time and effort into thinking through and talking about and evaluating and analyzing games.
Well, yes.
You know, but the other thing is, and it's because I fear, it's like, well, yeah, if you just take anyone off the street and you say, hey, you're a game reviewer, you're going to have consensus like that, you know? It's there. But is that the same as saying, like, finally, we could celebrate mediocrity, you know? Yeah. I mean, I just don't want it to be that.
Right.
Well, it's possible that, like, something like the Wii, if it keeps on the trajectory it's on, is going to be the game machine that starts doing the same thing that happens with movies and Rotten Tomatoes.
I see that.
Where, like, everybody is buying Wii Fit and all the critics are going, oh, my God, don't buy that piece of shit. Buy Mario Galaxy.
Well, how long have we been doing it with Sims, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. Okay.
True. Happens.
Right?
That stuff's there.
Number one, month after month after month.
Yeah. Except the Sims is actually kind of good.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's the 19th
but it's like we just...
Well, yeah. The Sims worth, yeah.
Yeah, we
or the deer hunter game, that whole deer hunting phenomenon.
that was big.
That was back in the, when was that? Like the late 90s.
Something like that.
Where, yeah, Target was selling deer hunting games, and they were like at the top of the list, and all the critics were going, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, instances like that are more anomalous in our industry than
movies,
but they do happen.
But they're there, you know. I mean, like, I've reviewed, you know, when I was at EGM, so many, like, dirt biking games and stuff.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's totally fun. It's fun in real life, and it makes for a fun game. But the way that the game is very clearly marketed for someone who lives and breathes that, or is like doing the majority of their shopping at Walmart, that sounds pretty snobby. But it's for comedy. Someone does the majority of their shopping at Walmart, which means they wear nothing but purple. Which means
it's all
I'm just joking. But yeah, you know, it's a game when it starts off like yeehaw. You're supposed to put it that way. Let's phrase it that way.
For that yeehaw.
Yeah. Turn that shit up. Well, there's that one particular where you win girlfriends. That was the perk. And as you progress in your career and become like a superstar motocross guy, you know the whole like aspirational lifestyle shit where like, yeah, it was all about MTV Cribs and stuff. Like, yeah, we gotta have money. We gotta have, you know, we gotta have all this. We gotta have these like multi-million-dollar houses where there's not a single book in it. See, I told you I'm not a snob. And taking that to a video game and saying, eventually you start with the most jack buck tooth, like pimple faced, chick ever. And so, yeah, that's totally bad. It's totally, you know, it's totally offensive. But then the next one gets a little better and it starts working the way up the like, would you hit it line, you know, until like at the end, everyone's like, yeah, I'd hit it. And then someone has to remind me the name of that game that I reviewed but forgot the name of. I was pretty excited when I got to that.
When you got to hit it.
Yeah, they leave you voicemail messages on your,
they do.
Fake answer machine.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Sean, you're...
No, it's not personalized like that, but it'll just be like... And it was nasty, actually, because when you... This is a classic GFW detour, but I love it. when you would actually start losing races, you would go back. So, like, you think you start at rock bottom, but you don't. Like, if you fail the first few races, you end up with that chick's mom.
Oh,
and then
she
starts sending you messages. So that's kind of funny.
That's pretty rad.
That's kind of... Yeah, but it was like... Yeah,
that's not too offensive.
Jerry Springer-ish.
To female gamers.
No, not really. Okay, so the point of that, put us back on track, is that, yeah, there are some equivalents to Kangaroo Jack in gaming, and I think that's there, you know? I mean, who was it? You know, this is, again, you know, at this point now I'm going to take from the Scapist, and some developer, could have been Warren Spector, said that basically all gamers want is Zelda. They want every game to be The Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which would just indicate, yeah, a certain quality to it, you know.
He meant in terms of quality, not in terms of actual gameplay.
Not the actual gameplay, but no, the quality and just, you know, that much put into.
Well, he's right.
The variety of gameplay, the, you know, the way that the soundtrack works and all that other stuff, you know. But also, there's just, take it in the broadest sense. It's just whatever. usually indefinable quality it is about Zelda that makes it spatial.
It is special.
Gaming goodness.
The one that I just said.
That's
I'd
the indefinable
have to
quality.
That's,
no, it's not. I know, and then for all of the, you know, things that sell really well that critics hate, there's the flip side. You know, you've got your Okamis, which...
Right.
If there really
which
was a one-to-one correlation...
Zelda.
Well, yeah, exactly. If it was a one-to-one correlation, that would have been, like, the best-selling game last year, and obviously it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a good point.
And Psychonauts, and yeah, and
Psychonauts.
So games like
yeah,
that.
We could do this a lot of those games.
Yeah. And I think, too, there's just a broad... I mean, like... Maybe it's just the nature of the medium too. You know, I mean, if a game is going to be fun and entertaining, like it's just maybe that's like a finer spectrum than for a movie, where you can have like the most miserable, ostensibly miserable experience you've ever had, like
and still enjoy
like
it.
Requiem for a Dream or something, and then someone is still going to say, "Oh, that was wonderful."
Right.
You know,
Schindler's List.
Yeah, and then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you'd have, like, Airplane or something, you know?
Yeah.
We certainly don't have that with games. I mean, there's certain things that it's almost like all games have to do. Maybe that would be worth looking into. I mean, just, like, thinking about what is it that each game
might be
gets right that, you know... I mean, that's an idea.
Would we want to sit through... That's a great question. Would we want to sit through a 40-hour Requiem for a Dream?
You know, the closest we come is our games like Condemned and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, because like that one is clearly like it's got some really janky control problems. Stuff, but you still play through it because like there's some disturbing crap going on. You can't put your finger on, and you're enjoying it on that. Like,
did you guys ever play Sanitarium?
And that was the kind of game. Actually, it's funny that you point that out because Condemned, insofar as games like ever really polarized game reviewers, was one that did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think even in EGM spread, there was a difference between. Like, God, it might have been as low as a 4.5 and an 8 or something, you know. So that's a good example of that.
Yeah, mostly horror games right now.
We need
I'm all on that now. This you know, I think I was scheduled to do it this week, but I missed out. But I'm going to go on EGM next week and talk about Darkness because that is another game doing that. I'm all for so far, and Michael Donahoe over there just hates it, can't stand it. It's not realistic. Back to the old Scorpion and the standoff at the fucking dipshit corral.
Realistic, really? Is that an argument?
He was all mad because he had to,
Isn't it a comic book?
He was all mad because, ultimately, you have demon tentacles and you're in control of little, you know.
So what, the tentacles aren't realistic?
No, but he was specifically upset because, you know, rather he wants the game to have flashing arrows on the ground, more or less, that indicate where to go. I honestly believe it's disturbing for him to play a game in that perspective, you know, first person that gives you freedom. Any kind of option whatsoever. And so when it's like, you know, the very beginning of the game, this isn't a spoiler. And if you think it's a spoiler, you're dumb, but you need to find your girlfriend's house. And the game communicates that to you in any number of ways. And if you find yourself getting lost, you can call her, you're in the subway, you can go to the information kiosk and they'll tell you like, and you know, it's not realistic because of course you go to a subway. I mean, it lets you fill in the blanks. So it'd be like if you told an attendant at Subway, here's the address. I know the address. Can you tell me how to get there? But instead you just say, hey, where's Jenny's house?
Okay.
And then they tell you, hey, make a left and then, you know, turn right on the next one. But so for me, that part of the game is actually really fun because Not just on its own, because I just like following directions to get to a place. Like the greatest thing for me ever is for you to send me on like a scavenger hunt in the city. Mm-hmm. But because in the greater context of the game and everything that's happening, so rather than just feeling like all I'm doing is ripping hearts out with demon tentacles and eating them to become like, you know, ever more stronger and demonic, there's something going on. I have a relationship with a woman. There's a place and I can navigate around it. There's other people around. And while these, you know, curtains fall down to various degrees at various points, I appreciate that was there. And it's the thing is, in this specific example, it's very, very easy to find her house.
Yeah.
You do exactly what the woman says and it's right there. And for him, he's like, fuck it, I don't want to have to look away around this map and try to find this shit. That's not realistic. You know, that's not realistic.
And it's interesting because, like, when I played that part, I totally was kind of almost ignoring the directions. And then I got outside
to go
and
look
around. And I got lost. I'm walking around just shooting everything, just turning random corners because I was kind of playing it like a linear FPS. And that was almost
talk to all the people in the subway.
Yeah, it was almost a training mission for me to go, okay, this is not a linear, straightforward thing. So I'm going to have to think a little differently. And I thought it was cool.
There's a submission. There's the guy who wants to play his harmonica. Someone beat the shit out of him. The bum that wants to play his harmonica. Mm-hmm. You talk to him, and if you want, you can go work on that. Very much like Riddick, you know, which I liked. And this was the interesting thing about this game. Now that we'll have to say, this is really relevant to GFW Radio because for we hope Starbreeze,
they
like Riddick,
it.
Will bring like it over to PC with you. The Director's Cut Edition.
Yes.
That's got commentary and whatnot. But so, you know, both games, they're alike in so many ways, but the one way that's interesting that makes them similar is that you take a dumb license, you know, Riddick, Vin Diesel right. movie, and you make it a good game, and then you take a stupid comic book from... a former, you know, the original Image team, and he made Top Cow afterward, and with just shit art and just the dumbest sounding concept ever. And then they take it so seriously that they're like, we're gonna make something good out of this.
Right.
So I don't know if they just have bad taste and their ability like is superior to their taste, and they're able to turn these things into.
Or if they almost like the
maybe
challenge.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or they like the challenge. We're like, we're gonna turn pieces of shit into gold. You know. Yeah.
Uh huh. You're gonna like and fucking Riddick.
So what they should do next is the According to Jim game.
Yeah.
Everyone's gonna be talking about how immersive According to Jim can be.
Do the impulse game.
What the hell?
That's the Flash comic.
Yeah. But the Darkness is just like a game of moments for me because like even like simple things like sitting on the couch and like watching To Kill
that's
a Mockingbird.
That's the coolest thing in that
I'm
game.
I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh my God, can I really just sit here and watch To Kill a Mockingbird in its entirety?
Or the fact that you wanted to sit down. Everyone I talk to fill you in quickly, the first time you go to your girlfriend's house, she's, you know, she's very happy to see you. She wants you to hang out. You have the choice to tell her about what's really happening in the world. I won't spoil that. Or you have the choice to just sort of like keep her blissfully ignorant. She wants you to spend the evening with her. You don't have to. You can walk out the door and go do stuff. But the acting, the performance is done so well. And even though despite the imperfections and graphics technology and stuff and the fact that we know she'll look like a horrible mutant in a year from now, you're like, I care enough about this simulacra to want to like... to sit down with her for a minute, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, I had to go do the dishes anyway. So it's like I sat down with her and left it there. And I'm like, I'm going to go do the dishes for one because I felt I should. But then I wanted to see what happened. I wanted to see what happened when the TV ran, like if there's some kind of Easter egg when the movie ended or something, if how they would handle it, you know? And it's interesting. You're sitting there in first person and you're at various times you might hold her hand. You know, she leans in. You put your arm around her shoulder and stuff. And this is all very cool stuff. So... it's not the reason to buy the game, but these things are placed in the context of a game where you're blowing dudes away and eating their hearts out and all this other kind of stuff too. So it makes it a well-rounded and I think ultimately interesting game. The thing is though, is like Madonna is just having none of it. The thing was the realism. I'm basically now ruining the debate I have with him. I'm just giving him everything away. But he was like,
have him on.
He was all into, go find him right now. But he's all
Mike!
Into, you know, like Hotel Dusk and stuff. And he was like, that's not a puzzle, how to find someone down the street. And it was like, oh, yeah, let's play Hotel Dusk where there's a literal five-piece jigsaw puzzle you put together to figure out how to go down the street. Fuck you!
That game lost me fast, actually.
Me too.
All right.
Oh, cool. GarageBand wants to do a software update suddenly.
Right now in the middle of our podcast?
Yeah.
Well, while you're going to edit this then, I assume?
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
No, it's fine. We kept going.
All right. Cool. Okay, that would have been a bad way to start our show.
Yeah.
Already editing, Lauren, 2 minutes into it.
So we got the usual gang of idiots here. I'm Jeff Green, editor-in-chief of Games for Windows, and with me today are as follows.
Ryan Scott.
Sean Elliott.
And Sean Malloy.
Darren Godson. Out on assignment or something.
True.
Secret. Don't talk about it.
So, as usual, we got a lot to talk about today. A lot. I'm not even kidding. We got, we're going to go into the ongoing Fallout 3 fan feud I'm having with those guys. We got big, huge StarCraft 2 news that we're really excited to talk about. Can't wait to get into that. We're going to look at Jeff Bell's ongoing sort of disastrous internet appearance that actually made the news at 1UP.com this week. I'm not sure why. We're going to look at the New York Times article on game criticism, and we're going to critique the notion of game criticism and what it's supposed to be about. What else? We got Silicon Knights has now sued Epic So that's going to be a pretty interesting feud going on probably over the next year or two. So we got a lot to say about that.
It's going to be good stuff.
Lots of stuff this week.
Just start talking about it.
So, yeah, we should get into it right away. Hello and welcome to GFW Radio.
This 1UP podcast is brought to you by Games for Windows. Welcome to Better PC Gaming. Created with the idea that gaming should deliver more. Games for Windows branded titles bring you all the fun of gaming without all the work. And with the hottest titles around and Windows Vista compatibility, Games for Windows promises to deliver great new gaming experiences every time you play.